The following program, The Russ Belleville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belleville Show are their own, and The Russ Belleville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belleville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Thursday, November 14th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We are continuing our week-long look at Child Protective Services. It's CPS week here at 420 Radio's Russ Belleville Show, and we've got a couple of great guests today in extended interviews to give you their perspective on the interface between our Child Protective Services, family law, and cannabis consumers. It's Thursday, so we normally would do a Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment. We're going to do that today at half past with Lieutenant Diane Goldstein. She's a retired lieutenant commander from the Redondo Beach Police Department. She's also one of the board members of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We'll ask her about her experiences dealing with family law situations and how that impacts marijuana consumers. And then in hour two, we've got an extended interview coming up with Mark Reinhart. He is a journalist with the blog Idaho Calling. He's been doing some great investigative work on the financial incentives of Child Protective Services to break apart families and how they have this perverse incentive to do so. We will talk about that in hour two. We'll also take your calls at 971-533-7111. Also on today's show, it's Groovin' Thursday, so Bago Schwago will be calling in. He's got us a great song today, so we will bring that to you. It's called Floating by Chaifa, I think is the way you pronounce the name of the group, but we'll find out from Bago Schwago at 20 after. Also on today's show, we're going to go behind the headlines. Sam Hurd, the wide receiver, former wide receiver from the Dallas Cowboys, was sentenced yesterday to 15 years in prison for marijuana trafficking, largely to fellow players in the NFL. We'll take a look at his statistics, the Cowboys' statistics, and whether or not marijuana is actually the secret to NFL success. But before we get to that, we've got our 420 radio news, and we've got headlines with a court decision out of Arizona that severely impacts the grow rights of medical marijuana patients. We've got a battle over a potential medical marijuana amendment in the state of Florida. My home state of Idaho claims that marijuana trafficking has tripled in the past 5 years. Massachusetts hospitals are looking at the effect of medical marijuana and whether or not they can allow it in their facilities. And parents in Pennsylvania who saw the Sanjay Gupta documentary Weed are clamoring for medical marijuana for their epileptic children. All that and more coming up on The Russ Belleville Show. Thanks for your support. We'll be right back after this.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers, because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belleville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Cannabis Outreach Collective is an alternative health and wellness option located in Gladstone, Oregon, that serves patients in the Portland area and beyond. We are a full-service alternative health and wellness collective accommodating patients with natural, organic, holistic, and homeopathic remedies, nutritional guidance, advice, education, and medical cannabis, fully in accordance with Oregon OMMP law. You can find out more about Cannabis Outreach Collective on Facebook at COC503 or by emailing cannabisoutreachcollective503@gmail.com or by telephone at 503-853-1319. Check out our menu on Weed Maps and visit Cannabis Outreach Collective today.
This is your 420 Radio News for Thursday, November 14th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Judge nixes medical marijuana users' right to grow their own from azstarnet.com. Medicinal marijuana users have no constitutional right to grow their own drug, a trial judge has ruled. Judge Catherine Cooper of Maricopa County Superior Court threw out a challenge by two men to a provision in the 2010 voter-approved Arizona Medical Marijuana Act that says only those living farther than 25 miles from a state-regulated dispensary can cultivate the plants. She said there is no basis for their claim that the provision limits their health care rights. But Cooper left the door open for the men to raise a separate challenge that the 25-mile rule amounts to a violation of their rights under constitutional provisions guaranteeing everyone equal protection of the law. She said, though, they have yet to make a case for that claim. They cited provisions of a 2012 constitutional amendment that says individuals cannot be forced to participate in any healthcare system. Judge Cooper disagreed, saying, quote, dispensaries are not a healthcare system, end quote. She said they do not manage, process, enroll, or pay for healthcare services for qualifying patients. Legal battle brewing over medical marijuana in Florida from bizjournals.com. To supporters, the wording of a proposed constitutional amendment to legalize medical marijuana is clear. But to Attorney General Pam Bondi in Florida and Republican legislative leaders and some politically powerful opponents, the proposal isn't clear enough and should not be allowed on the November 2014 ballot. Bondi's office said in a brief Friday, quote, the proposal hides the fact that the amendment would make Florida one of the most lenient medical marijuana states, allowing use for limitless other conditions specified by any physician, end quote. The full text of the proposed amendment defines a debilitating medical condition by specifying diseases such as cancer, Crohn's disease, Parkinson's disease, and multiple sclerosis, and also includes, quote, other conditions for which a physician believes that the medicinal use of marijuana would likely outweigh the potential health risks for a patient, end quote. Police, marijuana trafficking in Idaho triples in 5 years from KTVB.com. Idaho State Police say they're seeing a lot more marijuana traffic through the state than they used to. Said Lieutenant Brad Doty, quote, over the last 5 years, we've tripled the amount of drug seizures in regards to marijuana, end quote. Why the increase? Doty says it has nothing to do with anything that's changed in Idaho, rather within the nearby states. Quote, as those states that surround us lessen their marijuana laws, our drug seizures have increased, end quote. Doty says traffickers often take marijuana from those legal grow sites in those other states and bring it into and through Idaho to the Midwest to sell it. Since it's illegal here, there's higher demand and bigger profits, which is why Doty also believes this trafficking trend will only continue. Massachusetts hospitals weigh medical marijuana liability risk from commonhealth.wbur.org. As Massachusetts lays the groundwork for medicinal marijuana, new clashes between state law and a continuing federal ban on marijuana use are emerging. Hospitals, hospice care organizations, and nursing homes are weighing the balance of serving their patients and protecting billions of dollars in federal funding. Here's the dilemma. Toward the end of long forms that authorize federal payments to hospitals, an executive has to certify that, yes, the hospital is in compliance with federal law. But that statement would not be true if patients at the hospital are using marijuana for medical purposes and a doctor at that hospital is helping them. Parents demand medical marijuana for kids with relentless seizures from PennLive.com. Kathy Taylor never expected at age 66 to be fighting for her grandson's right to marijuana. Taylor, a retired lawyer, is among a contingent of Harrisburg area patients pushing for Pennsylvania to legalize marijuana for medical use. Many have children with severe seizure disorders. Many of them reached that conclusion after a recent report by CNN medical correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta called Weed. It focused on a Colorado child who was having hundreds of seizures per week. But Governor Tom Corbett is on record as opposing medical marijuana and saying he would veto a bill. And the Senate version is in a committee controlled by State Senator Pat Vance, a Republican, who said, quote, "The bill is definitely not coming out of my committee," end quote. This has been your 420 Radio News for Thursday, November 14th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines on the conviction of former Dallas Cowboys wide receiver Sam Hurd for marijuana trafficking and whether or not marijuana may be the secret to success in the NFL. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
Starting up a medical cannabis business, you don't just want any attorney. You want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Lauren Vasquez knows the details of California marijuana law from both a personal and professional angle. Lauren Vasquez rose from the ranks of college normal activists to become one of the Bay Area's best marijuana lawyers. Visit her website, firedublawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email firedublawyer@gmail.com. The number again is 855-MMJ-LAWS, 855-665-5297 for your Fired Up Lawyer, Lauren Vasquez. Lauren Vasquez is an activist attorney you can trust. Call today.
I'm a reefer smoking man.
Woodpipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy is your source for cannabis community gear in southern Wisconsin. Owners Brian and Tammy Wood are located in Kendall, just outside of Madison, and they've got everything for the smoking enthusiast, including a full assortment of pipes, water pipes, hookahs, bubblers, one-hitters, and so much more. They're open noon to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and can help you with your detoxification therapies as well. Call 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com for more information. That's 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com. And as always, go Pack, go.
The Russ Belville Show brings you the best in daily toker tunes every weekday. Each day features a different genre, including Roots Monday.
Folks, here's a story about Mindy Vermucher.
Electric Tuesday. Irie Wednesday.
I'm a ganja planter. Call me the ganja planter.
Groovin' Thursday.
Don't you wanna get high?
And Rockin' Friday.
Something like to hit the ball.
Then on weekends, we mix them all together in our weekend music party.
Welcome back, everyone. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And as you know, if you listen to the show regularly, I'm a huge fan of NFL football. So the news of former wide receiver for the Dallas Cowboys and Chicago Bears, Sam Hurd, got sentenced 15 years in prison yesterday for drug trafficking. He was facing 10 to life, so it wasn't as bad as it could have been. But this story is quite interesting, especially as you dig beneath the headlines on it, which we're going to do right now. First of all, the SI story came out yesterday as well that Hurd admitted, from his testimony, that he admitted to trafficking in pounds and pounds of high-grade California weed that he mostly shared with his teammates at cost. That 20 to 25 of his teammates for the Dallas Cowboys, he was smoking pot with them. And he was with the Cowboys between 2006 and 2010 and said he's regularly smoking with 20 to 25 of his teammates. Now, understand, an NFL roster, a full roster on an NFL team is 53, right? So we're talking about potentially almost half of the Dallas Cowboys regularly smoking high-grade California marijuana. So I thought it'd be interesting to look at statistics. And yesterday on Toker Talk Radio, I looked at Sam Hurd's individual statistics, and they look pretty standard as far as, I mean, he wasn't any superstar NFL receiver or anything, but it's not like his statistics declined over time throughout his pot use. Well, this latest story that I pulled off of culturemap.com was quite interesting. Culture Map Dallas is pointing out that for the years 2006 to 2010, the Dallas Cowboys made the playoffs three times and had a combined record of 48 and 32. So a winning record over those five seasons and made the playoffs three times. And since Hurd has left the Cowboys in 2011, Dallas not only hasn't made the playoffs, they haven't even had a winning season. Interesting. In fact, the time that Hurd was supplying about 40 to 50% of the Dallas Cowboys starters with weed, that was their most successful set of seasons since their 1990s, three out of four Super Bowl seasons, the Emmitt Smith days, the Troy Aikman days. Now, another point to be made here is to take a look at the two states where marijuana is legal, Washington State and Colorado, which feature the Seattle Seahawks and the Denver Broncos. The Seattle Seahawks are 9-1 on the season, and the Denver Broncos are 8-1 on the season, two of the three best records in the NFL. Meanwhile, let's also take a look at the state of Florida. The state of Florida is probably the worst state for a pot smoker. You can get a 5-year felony for possessing just an ounce. So how are the Florida teams in the NFL doing? Well, the Miami Dolphins are doing the best. They're 4-5. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Jacksonville Jaguars are both 1-8. They are two of the worst teams in the NFL. Now, all of this is just correlation. It's not causation. We can't prove one thing one way or the other. And it just so happens that Seattle and Denver have to have some of the best athletes on their teams as well. But if marijuana were causing such a huge problem with the players and their ability to catch and run and throw and tackle, we're not seeing it in the statistics. We're not seeing it in the win-loss records. And in fact, over the past five Super Bowls, two of those Super Bowls, the winning touchdown catch, the winning last-second touchdown catch, was made by notorious pot smoker Santonio Holmes and notorious pot smoker Plaxico Burress. And we can point to a number of NFL players who are great players. Lavon Brazil is one of them who got suspended this year. We can think back to Ricky Williams and so many others who did not deserve to have any extra scrutiny for happening to choose marijuana instead of the terrible painkillers they're given all this time in the NFL. In fact, what we know about concussion, we should be giving NFL players a volcano vaporizer bag the minute they get their bell rung. All right, stick around. When we come back, we got some Groovin' Thursday music for you. Light 'em up.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, The Russ Belville Show, Ganja John, and Cascadia Concentrates, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Adam's meticulous designs are individually crafted and screened in vibrant high-definition color. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
Даня Данько. Я редактор журнала High Times. Отвечаю за отдел культивации, или проще говоря, выращивания. Приглашаем вас в Амстердам с 24 по 28 ноября, чтобы посетить ежегодный турнир Cannabis Cup, уже 26 по счету. Там мы сравним множество видов марихуаны и гашиша из смежных кофешопов. Еще у нас там выставка товаров, семинары по выращиванию, ночные концерты и вручение премии за лучшие в мире сорта марихуаны. Хотите получить 10% скидку со стоимости билета? Используйте промокод Данько на сайте cannabiscup.com. Ждем вас!
Called a peace revolution, and now let's take back America.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Like millions of freedom-loving Americans, I'm a marijuana smoker, and I don't think that that should be any of the government's business. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. The next time you light up, take the time to let your elected officials know how you feel. It's time we legalize marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at NORML.org.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Groovin' Thursday, featuring rap, hip-hop, soul, and funk music. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for some Groovin' Thursday music, and we got Bago Schwago on the line. How you doing?
How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Glad to hear from you. And for today's tune, we're actually going to do something we don't usually get a chance to do here, and that is a double shot. I saw the uploads were kind of short, and I thought, well, what the hell? Let's play them both. So what can you tell us?
Yeah, it sounds like a great idea. I mean, they are two songs. I think they're only about 2.5 minutes long each. And I really couldn't find much information on this gentleman except for his name. I believe we say it Chifa. I know you were trying to figure out the way to
Chifa,
say it.
Chifa, that makes sense.
And he's out of Texas, and I don't really have much else on him except for these two songs. One's called Medicinal, and the other one is called Floating. And I like Medicinal over the other one, but they're both good ones to get your head bobbing.
All right, we'll play Medicinal by Chifa first. We'll follow that up with Floating. And the album appears to be Blowed and High. And if you're looking for Chifa online, it's spelled C-H-I-E-P-H-A. Chifa. So there we go.
Sounds like a plan. And hey, are you still coming out here in December? Is that still a plan?
That's right. December 4th, I will have a 10-hour layover at the Phoenix Airport. So we are planning to do a show probably from the Lax Lounge in Tempe. And it's my hope that you'll be able to be there live with us.
I'm planning on it. And now that I got my card, I should have no problems being there for sure.
All right. That sounds great. Let's get to the music. This is Chifa with Medicinal.
That's what I'm choking on. Got that lemon pie. That's what my friend's smoking on. Smoke a couple blunts. We out of this world gone. Still smoking on high grade. Speeding down the highway like Smokey off a Friday. I'm rolling up all day. My cup filled up with Bombay. Real nigga Entree. Smoking on that Cali mist. Chilling on my Cali shit. With a fine Cali bitch. That's on my shit. Gotta love it. Break it down and roll it up. Chilling with that ice cream. Cause I'm smoking Dairy Queen. It's nighttime. I might pop a bean. Roll up. I'm blowing on that Maui Kush. She's smiling kinda hard. Cause I'm feeling on that tush. And I'm rolling up them papers higher. Learning from them books, yeah. Blowing on that medical, put it in the blunt. Roll it up, take a puff. Now I'm high as fuck. Blowing on that medical, put it in the blunt. Roll it up, take a puff. Now I'm high as fuck. It's cheaper. You know I'm blowing all the time. Got that money on my mind. So I hustle and I grind. Smoking on that pine. Just to kill off the time. Looking in the sky. Cause I'm feeling kinda high. You know I stay fly. Like a G5. Only difference is I'm living in the sky. Your girl looking thick. So I'm about to baseball hit. Take a hit of the orange. Cause she lifted in this bitch. Smoking on that king shit. Nigga feeling gifted. Riding in my ride. So glad I lit it. Silver haze. Got me feeling lost in a maze. I got my shades on, hiding from the sun rays. Eyes low, so the shades, I gotta keep them. Smoking Bruce Banner, lungs coughing. Still smoking more joints, feeling stuck in the coffin. Nigga, I don't even know how a nigga walking. Blowing on that medical, put it in the blunt. Roll it up, take a puff, now I'm high as fuck. Blowing on that medical, put it in the blunt, roll it up, take a puff, now I'm high as fuck.
Bitch ass. Nah, I'm just playing. I'm high as fuck. I'm smoking on that good weed, that medical. So, I really ain't feeling shit right now. I don't give a fuck, bitch.
I keep on rolling up like a drive-thru. If you buy, I supply you. Medical hybrids, Tiva, Indica, loaded up. Take a rip, smoking on a vape stick. Do it all day, shit. High as a spaceship. Grind on the day tip, so glad to get chips. Do it for my kids, bitch. Bag it up and make flips. Show you how to get this. Money dog, I'm a hedgehog. Got a nose for the cheese, but it ain't yours. Nah, nigga, no. Nah. I be floating. I be floating, I be floating, I be floating.
It's that medical weed, that potent. It's that medical weed I'm smoking. It's that medical weed I'm choking. That's all a nigga be smoking. That's all a nigga be smoking. That's all a nigga be smoking. It's that medical weed that potent. It's that medical weed I'm smoking. It's that medical weed I'm choking. That's all a nigga be smoking. That's all a nigga be smoking. That's all a nigga be smoking.
De la revista High Times. Te invitamos a venir a Amsterdam desde el 24 al 28 de noviembre, al 26 aniversario de nuestro Cannabis Cup, donde demostraremos las muchas variedades de marihuana y hachís en los coffee shops. También tendremos una exposición de productos, seminarios de sembradíos, conciertos en las noches y una ceremonia de premios donde honramos la mejor marihuana del mundo. ¡Vámonos!
What makes something funny? How does humor impact health and psychological well-being? How can you incorporate humor into everyday life? A concise, reader-friendly introduction to an important but often underappreciated topic in modern psychology, Humor 101 explains the role of comedy, jokes, and wit in the sciences and discusses why they are so important to understand. Psychology professor Dr. Mitch Earlywine draws from his personal experiences in stand-up comedy to focus on how humor can regulate emotion, reduce anxiety, and diffuse tense situations, expose pretensions, build personal relationships, and much more. He irreverently debunks the pseudoscience on the topic of humor and leaves readers not only funnier, but better informed. It's part of the Psych 101 series from Springer Publishing, Humor 101 by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, PhD.
It's quite simple. I'm a very nasty drunk. I get mean. I get loud. I'll tell your deepest, darkest secrets to a stranger. And I'll puke on your shoes. So if that's the kind of behavior that this culture promotes, you know, fuck it.
Your one-room schoolhouse of choice. Your one-stop freedom shop. It's the Libra Lounge.
Sundays at 3, right here on 420radio.org.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everybody. 34 after the hour, and joining us right now is one of my favorite people in the whole world. On the board of LEAP, the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, we have Diane Goldstein. Diane, welcome back.
Hey, Russ. Thank you so much for having me here.
You know, we're doing a special series of shows this week where we're focusing on the impact of Child Protective Services and the drug war on families and mothers in particular. And I just wanted to open up with that and give you the opportunity to give us some of your experience on how you've seen this drug war affect families.
Well, you know, you have to really start with the purpose of having Children Protective Services was never to rip apart families. What it was to provide wraparound services and resources to keep families together. And taking children out of a family's home was the last thing that you would do, in the sense of there had to be some tremendous danger. So when I worked detectives, when I was working in law enforcement, whether it was patrol or as a supervisor, the assessment was, what can we do to keep the family together, number one? And number two is, how severe was the issue, the problem that needed to be corrected? And so you would really have to have someone who's molested or beaten or something really significant. And the war on drugs has changed that, simply that if you have, you know, let's start talking about medical marijuana as the classic example, is even though you're a patient, you're responsibly using it, we're going to take your children because it's against the federal law. And I think that's what needs to be changed.
And this is a story that we've heard over and over again. There's the Daisy Bram story there in California, Baby Bree in Michigan. We've got stories from all of these medical marijuana states where the mere use of medical marijuana, or in some cases the growing of a plant, is considered enough to be called child endangerment. And yet on yesterday's show, we spoke to...
Yeah, and that's not what child endangerment was about.
Right, right, exactly. And we spoke to Lisa Calvin, a teacher who had taught in Iowa, and spoke of her experiences reporting actual abuse, you know, seeing bruised kids in school who then Child Protective Services never did intervene, saying there wasn't enough to make the case, and then destroying that trust between the teacher and the child. How did this get so perverted in that actual cases of abuse are being ignored by Child Protective Services in favor of medical marijuana patients?
You know what? I think a lot of it has been driven by political ideology and rhetoric, quite frankly. And then I think no different than those underlying circumstances that surround policing for profit, there's also those underlying circumstances that surround adoption for profit. And it's, if you start looking at kind of some of the federal drug laws, they started to incentivize, whether it was CPS or law enforcement, for, you know, either arresting more drug offenders or taking children out of folks' homes who allegedly were drug addicts or used or abused drugs. Because there is an incentive motive for CPS. They are getting, and I'm not certain what the latest federal amount of money, but I think at one point they were getting like $8,000 for every successful adoption and termination of family rights.
Wow. This is, you know, it seems like every direction we look here, there's been a profit motive attached to it. We, of course, have talked many times about the burn justice grants that incentivize cops to go after pot smokers over real criminals. We've got the CPS now with adoption incentives to break up those families once the pot criminals are taken and put them with other families. And then we've got the prisons for profit, where we can take the pot criminals and house them away. What are we going to do, Diane, to change this profit motivation in any of those areas?
Well, you know, I think that probably one of the first places that we have to start is by really engaging our activist community to become much more sophisticated and much more politically astute. And they have to start taking responsibility for, you know, in some aspects, maybe it's creating a marijuana lobbying organization that contributes money to PACs that backs candidates that are pro-drug reform laws, you know, and it doesn't have to be a partisan issue. I mean, you can start looking at whether it's, you know, the Gary Johnsons of the world or some other politicians that are finally starting to call for the end of the war on drugs. I think that's going to be incredibly helpful. And then I think what is also successful is working with organizations like, you know, the ACLU or the Drug Policy Alliance or other local coalitions, where you can start bringing in personal experiences and stories. I was just in New Mexico over Veterans Day weekend, where I did an advocacy panel, or I wouldn't even call it a panel. I facilitated the whole entire day for the Drug Policy Alliance to encourage veterans to organize and then work with collaborative partners to get in front of legislators and tell their personal stories. There's nothing like an articulate mother whether it's Bree's parents or Daisy Bram or someone else's, who gets in there and talks about the things that happened to them when their family was torn apart. You know, the economic loss, the damage emotionally to children. You know, you start getting psychologists who work with kids that talk about the damage. You start, in addition to bringing in faces like Law Enforcement Against Prohibition or other social justice organizations that show the impact of removing a child out of that loving environment really early on. And let's just use classic examples like the two-three-year-old girl in Texas that was killed after her parents were caught smoking pot, even though it wasn't a danger to the child. The child didn't even know. I mean, those are the things that we need to address. And those personal stories makes it really hard for politicians to turn their backs on us, Russ.
Yes. And, you know, we've also spoken many times about the gross racial disparity in the drug war with respect to arrests and incarceration and sentencing and so forth. Did you see in your experience a racial disparity with how these Child Protective Services cases were handled?
No, interesting enough. Well, I think it's also very, it's different demographically. You know, where I was at is children were taken out of folks' home. And for the most part, it was done in a fashion that it really didn't revolve around the drug issue. But then it's changed radically in the last 10 years, which is when I've been out of law enforcement. I retired in 2004. It's almost 2014. And it's really been those last 10 years where it's changed dramatically. In California, you know, with respect to medical marijuana, it's been a lot of families that are kind of maybe living off the grid. They're white. They're not necessarily, you know, they're not urban. But it's different when you go to another city, so it really depends. But the classic example is even with drug use, when I was working, it was about the behavior. Because whether you're abusing prescription drugs or alcohol or, you know, some other type of substance, there had to been a distinctive behavior that caused your child to get taken away from you. Probably the classic example that I have is we had a child that was a failure to thrive baby, but the child wasn't being fed. It was filthy, the home, you know, there was cockroaches. There was a distinctive and important reason to take this child away from this family because it would have died from malnutrition.
Mm. Okay. We're speaking with Diane Goldstein from the Board of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. You can find out more about LEAP at leap.cc. And it is Child Protective Services Week here. We're kind of focusing on family law and how that interfaces with marijuana users, marijuana patients. And Diane, I've heard reports from some folks about how, you know, even people that were activists and had some idea of how criminal law worked by, you know, reading case after case after case, that were shocked once they realized that family law is not subject to a lot of the same restrictions as cops are. Can you give us any insight on that?
Sure. There's a much lower standard because you're not working within a criminal conviction. So all you need is really almost like a probable cause, and that's all the judge needs or the social worker needs to take that child out of the home. Now, there is a system set up in place where what happens normally when you have children that are taken away out of a family. So now you have attorneys that represent the parent. You have to have attorneys that represent the child independently of the parent. And then you have the social worker who has attorneys representing the county's interest. And then you have a judge. And it can be incredibly complicated. And one of the issues relative to it is what you have to also start looking at when you start looking at these drug issues is the coercive drug rehabilitation that's demanded. The coercive drug testing that people have to pass. And so there's all sorts of impediments that allows for failure. And instead of, you know, working with families to address were there any issues, or even to understand that, you know what, this parent is a medical marijuana patient, has never abused the child. This child in the system is going to take resources away from so many other kids. I mean, down here in LA County, Los Angeles County, Child Protective Services, I can't begin to tell you the scandal surrounding dozens of kids that have been beaten to death. And so here's kids that should be in the system that aren't. And then you're taking all this time to go after someone who's a medical marijuana patient. It just, to me, it's no different than that, you know, argument Leap always makes is right now we have 400,000 untested rape kits across America several months ago based on a special by Anderson Cooper. And the reason for it is because we continue to focus on drug war stats and drug offenders instead of going after violent criminals.
Yes, it's something we've discussed before, and it's just another one of those insane, perverse incentives of the drug war. Diane, we have to take a break for some advertising, but would you be willing to stay with us here, maybe do another 10 minutes at the other side of this? We'll wrap this segment up.
Absolutely.
Sounds good to me. We'll take a quick little break here. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show here on 420radio.org. Our guest is Diane Goldstein. She's one of the board of directors from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition and a tireless activist who is following me all over the country. We'll be right back.
I am.
Stick around.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for baking pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook wove all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more.
Statistics show that 40% of all kids who smoke marijuana live in the city. Guess where the other 60% live?
Legalize me. Don't criticize.
Just overjoyed. I've been cannabis activist for 40 years.
We're turning the corner on a failed policy that's been disastrous for our communities, and things are going to get better.
80 years ago, we repealed alcohol prohibition in this state. We did it prior to the federal government, and we're doing the same thing when it comes to marijuana. We are a step ahead, and we will continue to lead the way. It means I'm going to smoke a lot of weed tonight!
Some call it marijuana.
You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Some of them call it ganja.
Welcome back, everybody.
Indeed, we did legalize it in Washington State and in Colorado, and even that is still causing problems for families. Welcome back. We are in the middle of CPS week here on the Russ Belville Show, and that's right. Even in Washington and Colorado, where it is legal to possess and use marijuana, parents can still face discrimination. They can still face the loss of their children and the interface with Child Protective Services. We've got Diane Goldstein, a board member from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, on the line. Diane, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Russ. Much appreciate being on.
Hey, I'd like to get into that subject a little bit, this idea about legalization in Washington and Colorado. We just saw a poll that came out that people said by about a 2-to-1 margin that people shouldn't lose their jobs if they're smoking pot in a legal state. I would think that people's opinions with regard to losing your kids when you're smoking pot in a legal state would probably be even a bigger majority, but they do still face some danger there, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And, you know, I think part of that issue is the ongoing stigma that's associated with cannabis users. And I think that's the place where, you know, it's so difficult sometimes is to get people to come out of the closet. If every cannabis consumer came out of the closet publicly and, you know, demanded that the war on cannabis be ended, it'd be ended in just a hot second. But it's very difficult for people to shed that stigma that's been associated with being an illicit black market drug user. And until people, you know, let go of that, and until our politicians, until law enforcement does it, it's going to be very difficult. So, you know, this whole greater issue of legalization across the states and the acceptance of medical marijuana or full legal recreational, I think is significant because that's going to change the face of how we deal with our children and our families. And I think that, you know, LEAP says it, and I've said it for a long time, is we have to start recognizing and treating, you know, drugs differently. Is the first step, and although it's an incremental step to ending the war on drugs, is in fact legalizing marijuana. And as more states tip and turn that way, we'll have less of these abuses. But I think right now you're seeing kind of the last dying groan of dinosaurs across our federal government and across our law enforcement leaders. So they're hanging on to their power. And what's happening is they're abusing their power significantly. And like anything else, is when you have bad laws, bad things happen. And the more we can show the impact of the breeze or that tragic, horrible circumstance where that little girl got killed because of a foster parent, or things like the unconstitutional body cavity searches out of Deming, New Mexico, or, you know, Texas roadside body cavity searches on females. The more we shine the light, I think that the more change we can affect.
I agree with that. And I've seen a lot of that happening over the past 2 or 3 years with the Stiletto Stoners phenomenon and Moms for Marijuana and more of these high profile women coming out and admitting that they are cannabis consumers. But we get a good question here from our chat room. A lively Libra wants to know, how do you do that without fearing arrest when you're in a non-legal state, a non-medical state like Iowa or Texas or Florida? It's a little different than, I mean, well, there's some parallels with the gay and lesbian movement, you know, coming out of the closet, but you couldn't get arrested for being gay, although you could lose your job. How does one do that how would you do that in a non-legal state?
You know, I think that the strongest and the best way to do it is by getting in contact with a local drug policy reform organization. And the, you know, the ones I always recommend are like Drug Policy Alliance or the ACLU, that have some real significant legal beagles behind them and work through the back door to start sharing your story or your family's story with legislators and with people in power. But the other thing is simply coming out to your family and friends is a big part of it. It's, I mean, think about that. There's a lot of people who are very open about their being a cannabis consumer or being a patient, even if it's in a non-medical state, but they won't share that with people that they love because they feel that the people that they love will judge them. And so that's no different than the LGBT movement, is we have to start by influencing those closest to us, who then can carry that torch of advocacy for us as well. But it is scary because, you know, quite frankly, different than, you know, coming out of the closet in today's day and age. I mean, they used to arrest people that were gay and homosexual. They no longer are. But, it, you know, sometimes it's just starting off with those you love and then working your way into some more of a public advocacy type work. And that's the hard part, because you are going to be a target. I really believe that I'm a target in California law enforcement now because of my very, very strident voice against people like, you know, the California narcotics officers and the California chiefs. So I'm really careful about if I have a glass of wine, my husband drives or my son drives, you know, I mean, I understand that fear and having to protect yourself personally.
I just got back from visiting my folks in Idaho, and I always imagine at the Idaho State Police, there is a nice headshot of me with maybe a bounty in, I don't know what they'd put on my head there, but I understand where you're coming from, Diane. You mentioned coming out and being open with your family and friends, and in one situation or that happens, we have married couples who are using cannabis. Maybe one or both of them are using cannabis, but then they end up getting a divorce and one spouse will use that against the other spouse. Have you ever heard of, is there any possibility someone could, and maybe this is more a question for a lawyer, but something to the effect of a prenup where parents could agree they wouldn't use that against each other? I mean, that's an interesting side of this, don't you think?
You know what? And that's the, you know, people being people. I used to get that a lot when I was working child abuse, where people would basically accuse the other spouse of either physical abuse, being drug addicts, or sexually molesting their children. And so, you know, that's that whole ethical, moral, how do you get people to do the right thing and not to lash out against those that they used to love? I just find it appalling, because it's one of those things that, you know what, you were with this person enough that you had their child, and now you're out to destroy them. You know, it's different if that person is truly a bad actor and is endangering that child. But yeah, that'd be, you know, you could always do it in a prenup, but it would depend on how the courts would look at it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I would think that being, if, you know, an illegal substance in some states, you couldn't really make a contract regarding an illegal substance. I don't know. Yeah. We'll have to ask the lawyers.
Yeah. But it's a tough situation, and who suffers most in those types of situations, the children. Just like when CPS comes in and takes a child out of that loving environment.
You know, another aspect of this to talk about, of course, we focus primarily on marijuana on this show, but law enforcement against prohibition is for the legalization of all drugs. And while it might be easy to talk to the general public and say, you know, we shouldn't take away a kid if someone's smoking pot, I think it might be a harder argument to make if they're smoking meth or you know, snorting lines of coke. To what level should someone's drug use be a per se indicator of bad parenthood?
I think is when, and this is the real difficulty, because it's very, very subjective, because you could go into someone's family and that mother, if she has one drink, turns abusive. So I think just like when we talk about it from the LEAP perspective, you have to separate the behavior away from simply the use of that drug. We have a tremendous amount of laws on the books already that today, if all drugs were legal today and we walked into a house and you had someone who was on heroin assisted program, let's say some type of pharmaceutical model, and they beat their child because of being under the influence, it's the behavior that you have to focus on. And I think that's the thing that we have to continue to do. And then we have to give families who are struggling with addiction, no matter if it's prescription drugs or something else, the resources in order to get effective treatment and become better parents.
Absolutely. Diane Goldstein with the Board of Directors of Law Enforcement Against and also a former Lieutenant Commander, Redondo Beach Police Department. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us your expertise, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Russ. Always a pleasure.
All right, folks, that's all the time for Hour 1, but come on, Hour 2, we've got Mark Reinhart from Idaho Calling with a deep look at the financial incentives in Child Protective Services. For everyone here at the Russ Belville Show, I'm Radical Russ, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you